Hello and welcome to the DTFH. Have you ever wondered what Alex Honnold, the world famous solo free climber, thinks about aliens? You're gonna find out in this episode. Also, he almost crushed my hand. You'll see that too. He's a powerful, beautiful, incredible human being. We're essentially brothers now, and I will be climbing, free climbing. Right after this, I'm going free climbing by myself up a big old mountain, and I'm not afraid anymore. But first, before we dive into this episode, I want to invite you to come see me do stand-up comedy at Helium in Philadelphia. That's May 1st through the 3rd. That's this Friday, this Saturday, this Sunday. After that, you can find me in Cleveland at Hilarities. That's May 8th through the 9th, and then I'm coming home to La Jolla, California, the Comedy Store. I hope you guys will come see one of my live shows. Get those tickets in advance, won't you? Because it makes me feel good. All right, everybody, get ready. You know Alex Honnold. He is a globally famous solo free climber. He just climbed Taipei live on Netflix, this huge fucking building. My whole family watched, your hands sweat watching this man. But he's amazing, an inspiration. But did you know he's funny as fuck? What a pleasant surprise. He's super cool. I can't believe I got to hang out with him. God bless you, all of you who made this podcast happen. Everybody, get ready for a wild conversation with Alex Honnold. Alex, welcome to the DTFH. Holy shit. I can't believe I get to do a podcast with you.
Wait and see.
So, you know what I've gathered the last like 10 minutes hanging out with you? You are funny. You're like a really funny person, man.
I don't know, yeah.
You made me laugh a bunch.
Do my best.
And you made me cry. You've made America cry and the world cry. Oh, yeah. We watch you. We watch you. People love you. And then there you are on the side of these rock faces with nothing. Number one, it's a critique of all humanity. All of us feel like, what are we doing with our lives? What's wrong with me? Imprisoned by fear.
Why am I not hanging on a cliff right now?
I don't know how many times when I've seen it with my kids sitting around me looking at me like, why don't you do that, Dad? Why don't you free climb massive cliffs? I'm like, why don't I do that? But man, the role you play, I don't know if you understand like what you represent to a lot of us, which is this fearless, liberated connection with nature, and it's beautiful.
Yeah, no, I guess I don't know that. I'm just living, you know. I just do the best I can, and people take what they want from it.
Do you know what quantum immortality is?
No.
Okay, this is what I wanted to chat with you about. So quantum immortality is this crazy theory, and for it to work, there has to be a multiverse. So there has to be infinite versions of you. And so this is the idea that you can't die, that in fact, when you die, really what happens is you instantly blip over into a parallel universe where you are exactly you, doing the exact same thing. And so as I'm watching you, I just wonder like, oh, wow, I bet I'm in the timeline where he doesn't fall. But is there
an infinite number of timelines where he does fall?
All the time.
Yeah.
The time. You're not even that good a climber.
Yeah,
you're
just every move. Yeah, every move. Each universe, you fall on the first move, then you fall on the second move, then you fall on the third.
Yes.
It's like Groundhog's Day. You slowly learn the sequence by falling one move higher each time.
Yes. Yeah. Huh. You ever wonder about stuff like that?
No, that seems like a really reassuring fiction. You know, something that people came up with, like, when I die, I just reappear and keep going. It's
well,
totally fine.
I agree with you. It does seem like either a reassuring fiction or the most terrifying version of hell ever, an inescapable infinite timeline where you just keep popping over and over and over and over and over.
No, it seems great because you don't know that you've popped from a previous one, so if you don't know them.
Maybe that's what deja vu is. You know, whenever you get a deja vu, you just you kick the bucket and you popped over.
I think deja vu is just because I have a bad memory and I'm like, I have done this before. You know what I mean? I think I get deja vu and I'm sort of like, oh no, I did come here 6 years ago on that event, but I couldn't remember. And you know,
how many things that are just related to like bad memory, neurological decline, do we attribute to mystical stuff?
Totally. Well, I live in Vegas. Like Nevada has like a huge UFO culture and sort of like a paranormal, you know, people go to the desert and whatever.
Yeah.
And as someone who's had a lot of big experiences outside, I'm sort of like, I think most of that stuff is easily attributed to just having big experiences outdoors where you're like, and then I was really dehydrated and I was really tired and I hadn't slept, or, you know, I was like on a big hike, or, you know, basically if you push yourself long enough physically, you always start to like see things or hear things or have weird experiences.
What percentage of your life, not that you know the exact number, but what percentage of your life is spent outside?
Well, less now that I have kids.
Yeah, right.
I mean, I used to, you know, I lived in a van for 10 or 12 years or something, where you're basically just recreating outdoors every single day.
Yeah, and so you would think that spending all that time outdoors, you definitely would have seen a UFO by now, if they're out there, right? You would think of all the people that see an orb, it's going to be Alex Honnold.
Yeah. You know, maybe, yeah. No, I just think, like, so in Nevada, you know, everyone's like, oh, I saw an UFO. And you're like, dude, there's so many military bases around. And people are, like, hiking in the desert and this weird stuff. And you're kind of like, it doesn't seem that crazy to see something unusual flying.
So you're a skeptic.
Yeah.
You're like, a sort of realist skeptic.
Yeah, a realist. I mean, the thing is, like, I definitely believe there's probably life in the universe. Like, surely there's life in other places. But the idea that life flew here in something that looks suspiciously like a U.S. Air Force aircraft and came just in the last 60 years since we've developed airplanes, you're kind of like, nah, you know, it seems unlikely.
Debunker. We got a debunker here, gang. Oh, I love it. I love it. Well, look, you know, this has been where my mind goes. And, you know, I was throwing around Occam's razor. You know Occam's razor. Yeah, you live by Occam's razor, don't you?
Yeah.
That you live or die by it, right? You have to choose the simplest.
Yeah, simplest solution.
Simplest solution.
Makes sense.
Yeah, and so I was talking to someone who's like in the UFO disclosure community, and I presented exactly the argument that you presented. Come on, this is.
You're like, surely it's a little suspicious that all the UFO sightings are since the advent of modern aircraft. You know what I mean? There's not a lot of historical record from the 1700s that people say, you know, whatever.
Anyway. Well, there are. I mean, that's, of course, that's what they're going to point you towards, is like all the various paintings, drawings, biblical depictions of what appears to be, you know, someone who hadn't encountered technology encountering something, right? But I was trying to use the Occam's razor thing. It's like, let's look at the simplest solution here. Are we really going to imagine that in an infinite universe, and we're in the middle of this like void, apparently, compared to like other like galaxies where this we're out in the boondocks out here? You really think that we've been identified and beings are flying here and they're even interested in us at all? We're essentially like a monkey ant pile. You think they're flying around looking at like these?
Well, and more so, do we think they're flying around? You know, it's like if you came here from another galaxy, would you be flying something that's like a little fighter plane? You know what I mean? It's like kind of a weird.
Right.
It's like
right.
So it's pretty vast distances to be whatever.
Yeah. Let's continue to punch holes in like the idea that these are beings. It's like, number one, like you're saying, why is it that the way they look seems to be based?
They're suspiciously like humans.
Yes, especially to the point of, like, can you pull up, like, UFO that looks like, I guess, Josh, look up like, drawing of, you know, old drawing of UFO that looks like a Zeppelin. You know, like, if you look at the way, throughout time, these UFOs, they do seem to match the technology of the era. You know, people would draw these, I don't know if you're going to find it. This is the dumbest search.
Those are just actual Zeppelins.
This is the dumbest search you could ever do. Forget it. You're not going to find it. But I've seen, oh, there you go, 1869 UFO. What do you know? Looks like a blimp, right? Because that's what was the cutting edge back then. Blimps used to blow your fucking mind. We look at the Goodyear blimp and we're like, whatever. But in those days, that was crazy.
You put a blimp from another galaxy? That's cool.
Galaxy Blimp would be an incredible show. But this episode of the DTFH has been brought to you by my friends at Amantara. You know, a lot of people have no idea that their Christmas decorations are modeled after a psychedelic mushroom that has been used for millennia. Amanita muscaria is incredible. It is a legal mushroom that works on the GABA receptors. And what that means, at least from my own subjective experience, is you get this beautiful, euphoric, psychedelic experience that, to me, it does remind me a little bit of other types of mushrooms, but in this case, it's relaxing. You could sleep on it. It's amazing. I invite you to try it out yourself. You got to check out Amantara. You got to check out Amantara. They specialize in Amanita done properly. Clean sourcing, clear education, no sketchy mini-mart mushroom gummy nonsense. That shit out there is dangerous. They're the largest importers and exporters of Amanita in the United States for a reason, and they've helped over 50,000 people find this mushroom. They also carry other plant medicines, but Amanita is really their thing, and it shows. If you're curious, you can check them out at www.amantara.com/go/Duncan. Use code Duncan22 for 22% off. I recommend starting low. See how it feels for you. To quote Mahatma Gandhi, you can always take more. You can never take less. Treat it with respect. Use all the incredible materials you can find on Amantara's website to help you determine dosage. Be safe out there, kids. This stuff is real. All right, back to the podcast. Okay, look, click on Reddit, the mysterious 1896 airship sighting. Now look at this thing. This is a depiction.
That one came from another galaxy for sure.
You could tell by the fans.
Yeah, it survived reentry, like no problem.
It
enters the atmosphere so slowly that it doesn't burn up. That's all part of the plan.
Let's read it. In the late 19th century, long before the Wright brothers' first powered flight in 1903, the United States experienced a wave of mysterious aerial sightings known as the Great Airship Mystery of 1869 to 1897. An egg-shaped or cigar-like, the object was said to move against the wind, emit a powerful searchlight, and even carry human-like occupants whose voices, laughter, and songs, they were singing. These accounts spark widespread speculation, hoaxes, misidentified celestial events. So anyway, I think that this argument is what I presented to this UFO disclosure person. He's like, you know, actually saying that these things are created by humans or the military or that they're this is not Occam's razor, because that's a complex solution in the sense that.
Well, so the simple solution is that people just see some weird shit in the sky. Right?
Yeah.
Where you're like, oh, it's weird clouds, weird weather. You like heard something.
And then you could,
they're tripping.
You can write off all human observation as that if you wanted to. You could just say, you know, of course you're going to see something in the sky, and most of the time you don't know what that is. Like, there's an infinite number of things you could see in the sky, including like bizarre aerial phenomena that we already know about, like ball lightning and
or like aurora borealis type stuff.
They're shit like
coming way further south. So you're like, you're in San Francisco, but you see like weird lights for the first and only time in your life.
Right. Like, yeah.
That's weird.
Exactly. But then where it gets interesting is pull up, like, I don't know that. Can you find the one that Corbell showed us? The UFO Corbell showed us, the one that like the Hellfire missile locked on. This is where it gets interesting, is that what we're getting to right now is, maybe find the YouTube video. What we're getting to right now is we have this incredible tracking technology that is, and people are leaking this who are in the military because they think people should know about this stuff. And we're starting to see these bizarre, scroll down that thing. We're starting to see these bizarre things.
I want to queue up a video that I've been given. And as before it starts, I'm going to describe. This was taken October.
So what we got here is this drone, I guess, is picked up on one of these UAP things, locked onto it. And you'll see what happens in a second here. It's pretty wild. Boom. Watch. Nothing. Three little things come off of it, and it just keeps moving. So this stuff has been is what's created this, like.
But that's like, what did we just see? And what is this at all? You know what I mean? Like, this is the problem about pulling up weird conspiracy shit on YouTube.
It's not conspiracy. Like, you know, I get it, well, man. I totally,
you know,
get
mean?
It.
You're like, nah.
I totally get it. I totally get it,
like,
man.
Has either one of us ever seen, like, is that even, you know, you're like, what is that?
Well, I mean, this, the reaction that you're having is what, the term that people use for it is not that you're having actual shock, but they're calling it ontological shock, which is like basically we've been, since, you know, we were kids, UFOs are batshit. UFOs are what crazy people talk about. UFOs are sci-fi. UFOs are not real. That can't be real. It's not real. And so we're really not good at opening up a paradigm where also the argument being like, it could be anything. Also, we do live in an infinite universe, and we're interested. We've just become technological if you look at the age of the Earth. And we're already, the tech we have is incredible. We've got the James Webb Telescope floating out there, the size of...
Though something tells me it'd be very unincredible to anybody coming from other galaxies.
Well,
you know what I mean?
That's applying like a human logic. The problem is we're trying to wrap our heads around something that might not even be from space. A lot of like the theories on this stuff are that these things, the way we conceptualize movement, travel, energy, all of these things lock us into a framework that makes it so stuff like this just doesn't make sense. And so now we've got this like incredible thing happening, which is for sure there's something. Now what it is, I veer towards what you're veering towards. More likely, this is the exact, this is probably the lead up to when we got split the atom. You know, they figured out some new physics. They figured out some new drone technology. They're testing it right now. Of course, we're going to see it. And that's what we're seeing, is some new physics potentially. That's something that occurs to me. But a lot of people are putting their ass on the line, man. There's like people working at Lockheed and people working at all these like private contractors who are saying over and over and over and over and over again that no, it's, this shit is not our tech, that it's something's like watching us, and they crash and they want to reverse engineer it because then they could turn it into weapons of war.
That'd be sick.
Wouldn't it be sick?
Yeah.
I know, but then you look at like when you, who knows, but they're also saying no, they can't reverse engineer it. So it's a mystery, Alex. It's a mystery.
Well, hopefully I suspect that by the time we die, it'll be in the same place where we're like, it's a mystery. Who knows? You know what I mean? I bet there'll be no clarity on this in the next 50 years. That's my prediction.
Shall we bet?
Yeah.
What do you want to bet? $100?
Yeah, I bet $100.
Okay, I'm going to bet you $100 right now.
I'm going to bet $100 that there are just as many, you know, paranormal occurrences and experiences like this, but with no hard evidence. You know, nobody reverse engineering.
That's not
space.
A bet. We got to make a solid bet here.
Okay,
I'm
going to
bet you $100 bet.
Yeah.
Within the next 2 years, so it's a 2-year timeline. You can
make,
within the next 2 years, the federal government is going to show proof that we have been collecting crashed alien ships.
You think in the next 2 years, the federal government? Okay, yeah, I'll bet you.
You got this? Yeah. You got this? You got this?
People have been saying that kind of stuff for 50 years.
Yes. See,
but
this
you think
is not
next
fair.
Two is going to be the.
You know why this isn't fair?
Why?
Because you are you're healthier psychologically and physically than I am, meaning that you're not online all the time.
That's true.
You're not online all the time, meaning you're probably not aware of all the stuff that's happening right now. And I just made that was like a scam bet. So it's not really fair.
Yeah, you might as well just give me $100 right now.
How does it turn into me giving you $100?
you think the federal government is going to release evidence of alien activity in the next 2 years?
Josh, pull up Trump's four-point plan in revealing alien technology. This isn't fair. I have more information than
President
you do.
Has Trump been executing well on all of his plans? Because I feel like all his plans in the real world aren't really going that well, let alone his alien plans.
As you remember, I recently directed the secretary.
Have you noticed that all your videos are from the New York Post? You're basically just like watching New York Post.
What? Josh, why are you doing that?
It's my algorithm.
What I'm saying is that it's just feeding you UFO stuff because you're into UFOs.
Josh, are you working for the New York Post? Why do you do that? I've never even noticed that. You notice stuff like that.
Because I look at sources for that stuff. You're kind of like, it's just somebody's YouTube channel. Anything, like, feeding you weird stuff.
Josh either shows me stuff from the New York Post or Turning Point. Why do you always, do that, Josh? Who are you working for, man? Who are you working for? Get the New York Post off. But this is, so Trump has, you know, and I agree with you, everything he says at this point, you're just like, in fact, when he said he's going to reveal UFOs, that was a real crushing blow to me because I'm like, okay, there's not UFOs.
You know there are no UFOs, yeah. That's why you're just going to give me $100 right now.
It's a two-year bet. It's a two-year bet. I think it's going to happen within like the next few months.
We'd extend it to three to make it through his whole presidency. If you really think it's going to...
Well, I would extend it to three if I thought the planet would exist in 3 years. I think within 2 years we're going to get it. But that's cool. I think, yeah, I get it. Like the kind of mind you have to do what you do, he's got to cut out all the bullshit, right? Like you can't really get lost in the sauce when you're up there on the... On a cliff face. You know, you can't... You have to have the most clear... You can't fuck up.
We certainly try not to.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm really curious about that. I'm really curious about, like, what do you do? Like, do you have, like, breathing methods you do up there? What do you do when you find yourself in a pinch up there?
Yeah, I try to breathe all day, every day. I just breathe.
I just never stop. I've noticed when I stop breathing, gets weird.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. No, there's no particular thing. I mean, basically, it's just practice. You just go soloing a lot, and you get better at soloing.
When was the first time you soloed?
I think in my home climbing gym when I was a kid after hours.
Did your parents know you were doing that?
No, I mean, in the gym. You know, I mean, there's all a spectrum between I'm bouldering, I'm climbing with a rope, and then I'm climbing a little higher without the rope. You know, it's like, I don't know. In a gym with a padded floor, you're kind of like even soloing. You're like, well, it's only 30 feet to a padded floor.
Did your parents have like strict rules for you in that gym, or did they just trust you were going to be okay?
No, they didn't. They didn't know anything about it.
They didn't even know. They didn't come and watch you.
No, my dad would come and belay quite a bit. My mom, like, basically didn't know anything about climbing until I was like in my 20s.
Did she have any kind of reservations about your, like, this was the direction?
No, they were like, well, I mean, I don't think either of them thought of it as a direction. They weren't like, at no point, thought like, this is what I'm going to do with my life. Because then they probably would have been more stressed.
Right.
You know, but no, as far as like healthy hobbies go, you know, I grew up in suburban California. I was biking to the gym all the time and rock climbing, and I was getting great grades. So you're kind of like, I mean, I don't know, certainly worse hobbies to have.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. You think our culture has gotten a little like, too safety conscious right now? Like,
dude. I mean, yeah, my parents gave me a lot of latitude in terms of just like biking by myself, and it was like 7.5 miles each way, so it's like a 15-mile journey across town to go to the climbing gym. And I like crossed a river and like bike paths and in the dark, and I never had a light on my bike, so I had all these misadventures biking home in the dark. And my parents were just like, you know, as long as you go, like, basically they were totally unstressed about it.
How old were you? Like,
I don't know, from like 13 to 18 or something.
Right. Yeah. And like, yes, I want, you know, but the rubber really hits the road when you have kids. We both have kids. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and you recognize, like, there is something in children that is has no fear, not because they're impervious to fear, but they haven't really hurt themselves yet. They're not aware.
Yeah, they haven't experienced terrible things yet.
Yeah, exactly. And so there's this constant, I don't know, there's just this constant... shift between helicopter parenting or neglect. You know what I mean? Like you it's finding that line of letting them fall, letting them get hurt within reason, but you can't let them do certain things.
Yeah, you're just trying to avoid catastrophic injury.
Yeah. So are you finding that with your kids? Like, have you hit that place yet?
Yeah. I mean, definitely. I think a big part of parenting is you know, sort of spotting my kids, like making sure they don't get really hurt. But then ideally, them not really knowing that you're spotting, you know what I mean? So they feel like they have full agency. They feel like they're doing their thing and they're exploring and they're adventurous and they're having a great time.
Right.
But you are there to make sure they don't get catastrophically hurt.
Yeah. Are your little kids climbing already?
Yeah, like climbing on stuff. They're not like rock climbing cliffs. Well, I mean, or a little bit, but not really.
Yeah, just because they see you do it. And, you know, because
yeah,
and
we have like a home gym. And so obviously they climb in the gym and play around. And I mean, literally everyone they know climbs.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Like, you're including their grandparents and their, you know, all the in-laws and like my cousins, like, you know, like everyone that my kids have ever interacted with basically climbs.
Man, it is such an insane subculture and beautiful. It's beautiful. I'm just an observer, but I love watching mountain climbing documentaries. I love the logic that you all have. I don't remember the documentary on Netflix. It's so intense because, God, you probably saw it. I'm sure you saw it.
I'm sure I've seen it. Which one?
They're trying to climb
Meru.
Yes.
Three guys on a big wall.
Yes.
Camping, and it's crazy and it's snowy.
Yes. Yeah, and they're about to summit, but they're doing this climber math and they realize that
they have no food.
What?
Well, realize what?
The risk is not acceptable. Even though they're right there. Hmm. Right there. If they just rolled the dice, they'd probably make it. They'd gone through all this trouble to get there. But because at this moment, the calculus was, no, it's too dangerous. They didn't do it. They went back down. And I found that to be so impressive and so powerful, man. That's such a powerful decision. But what would those people think about what you do?
I mean, same thing. I mean, the thing is, I think they would think that that decision was obvious in the moment. And I think that the decisions that I'm making when I'm free soloing seem obvious in the moment. You know, I mean, I think it stems from the same thing where you're trying to have a big experience in nature, trying to like climb a wall, do something exciting. But obviously you want to be able to go home.
Yeah.
And so you're willing to push to a point, but not past it.
Yeah. And so how often have you found yourself going back down or just realized?
Like, yeah, fair amount. I mean, actually, even in the film Free Solo, you know, I bail on my first attempt at free soloing all cap. But I've definitely have bailed off all kinds of solos.
Those moments where you're sort of this episode of the DTFH is brought to you by Mint Mobile. To quote the mystic George Gurdjieff, you can never awaken using the same system that put you to sleep in the first place. It's not going to work, guys. And Mint Mobile clearly was inspired by this incredible mystical teacher when they created Mint Mobile. How are you going to wake up? How are you going to gain realization? How are you going to actualize your consciousness and tune into the guy in mind if you're paying too much for wireless? It's never going to happen. You must have the ability to untether yourself from these rotten technological anchors, these vampiric, parasitic companies that are slurping your bucks away. You don't have to do that. You don't have to overpay for wireless just because that's how it's always been. Mint exists purely to fix that. They're here to rescue you with premium wireless plans starting at $15 a month. $15 a month. That's nothing. That's 1.5 Pokemon cards. I don't know how much Pokemon cards cost. I'm sure they're probably more for Pokemon cards. All plans come with high-speed data and unlimited talk and text delivered on the nation's largest 5G network. And I got to tell you, man, I'm thinking about untethering right now. I'm going to name the company that's currently got its vampiric, Lovecraftian proboscis jammed right into the heart of my family. I think I'm gonna break free. Wish this had existed 15 years ago. Bring your own phone and number. Activate with eSIM in minutes. You start saving immediately. No long-term contracts. No hassle. If you like your money, Mint Mobile is for you. Shop plans at mintmobile.com/Duncan. That's mintmobile.com/Duncan. Thank you, Mint Mobile. Upfront payment of $45 for 3-month 5-gigabyte plan required, equivalent to $15 a month. New customer offer for first 3 months only, then full price plan options available. Taxes and fees extra. See Mint Mobile for details. Calculating instantaneously whether you should keep going or go back down. And in those moments, how much are you wrestling with yourself? Is there any wrestling with yourself?
Yes, sometimes a little. I mean, often you know, you're like, oh, I should bail. But then you're like, God, I don't want to be like duty. You know, it's like maybe. And then you're always kind of wondering like, well, maybe I can, you know, sneak past it some other way. Or like, you know, maybe there's some way around this. You know, when you're sort of like, I don't think I want to climb this because I think this is too hard, let's say, or the rock quality is too bad or whatever else. But you're like, but maybe I can go out to the right and go around it and then keep going.
Yeah.
You know, it's like there's always, I think your mind gravitates towards sort of escapist thinking where you're like, well, I can't do this, but what about some other thing? Like maybe I can sneak it out anyway. Like surely I can find a way to make it work.
Yeah.
I mean, the same way that you know, like when you're driving, you hate to make just a U-turn. You hate to be like, I was just going the wrong way. I'm giving up.
I hate
it. You'd rather make a loop out of it or be like, oh, I went for a little journey and like, it's fine. You know, I wound up back where I started, but at least I had an adventure. It's like, I think with soloing, it's kind of the same way. You don't want to just like give up and be like, I failed. But if you're like, well, I took a detour and I wound up back where I started and had a great outing, then it like feels better on the inside.
Exactly. Because the point, I mean.
You just don't want to feel like a failure, but at the same time, you want to survive.
Yeah, because in what you do, obviously, failure is like extinction. Like it's over. Yeah.
Yeah, though in climbing in general, so I mean. You know, I only free solo occasionally. Most of the time I'm training in my garage or climbing with friends or climbing with ropes or whatever, like normal climbing. And in normal climbing, you fail all the time, nonstop. I mean, you basically, every time you climb, because if you're pushing your, you know, if you're pushing your limits, you're always falling. And so, you know, 5 days a week, you're just failing nonstop as a climber.
Right.
And then on the occasional free solos, that's where you make sure you don't fail.
How often are you free soloing? How often do you do it?
Not that much anymore. Mostly because where I live, I've kind of tapped out all the things that I care about soloing. And then easy soloing for me now doesn't feel that worthwhile. Basically because it's like a waste of the time that I could spend training or doing other things.
Right.
Though I actually went easy soloing the other day just to get a little outing. I'd like to have
easy soloing.
Like very easy. Like I stayed in my approach shoes. So like sort of in your sneakers, just climbing up them.
But if I easy soloed.
You would die. Yeah. Not that easy. Like it's still rock climbing.
For a second, I'm like, holy shit, I could do it.
You could do it with a rope. Like, I mean, the thing that I soloed, like, you could easily get up if somebody had a rope and they were talking you through it. And like, any fit normal person could probably get up it with some doing.
Well, but you know,
they'd be like, this is crazy. You know, it'd feel pretty insane.
I'm sure when you look at me, you realize we're brethren when it comes
elite
to
levels of fitness for sure.
Yeah, elite levels of fitness. You could but you see in my eyes the look of a free solo climber.
Yeah, for sure.
And so let me tell you why. I ran a ropes course when I worked at a summer camp. So I know what it's like.
To free solo?
No, I was always
you had a full body harness and a helmet on at all times. But you know.
But I'll tell you, man. What was really cool about that is before I did that, I was terribly afraid of heights. Hmm. And this guy who ran the summer camp, like I lived in town, he's like, I want to show you what we've built. And I go out there, I'm like, holy shit, that's crazy. It's so far up in the trees, that's crazy. And he's like, you're going to run it this summer. I'm like, what the? No, I'm not. Are you out of your mind? I can't. I'm afraid of heights. And he's like, I know, but you're going to run it. And man, it was the most terrifying thing the first time, even with ropes, climbing up there. And then I just remember, like, how beautiful it felt to, like, overcome this phobia. And I would go up, and I, by the end of the summer, I was, like, always up there. I would climb up there and just, like, lay on the one of this long log. You'd get the kids to cross, and, like, the trees would breathe, and it'd lift you up and down. And it was this transcendent experience, man. That
I think that's a big part of what people love about climbing, is that that whole process of going from, like, this seems crazy, that's so scary, to I feel comfortable and confident and good.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
That, I mean, you should have become a climber.
It's never too late.
I mean, never too late.
Four kids. We just upped my life insurance policy. I'm sure my wife wouldn't fight me on it. She'd probably let me go free climbing with you now.
Yeah, get some.
But yeah, that's kind of I do think that's sort of another thing that you, like, just with what you do, is, like, that inspires people. You know, that really does. It inspires people to, like, kind of push their boundaries and to, like, move.
But I think it inspires people to push their boundaries in whatever way they feel like they need to push their boundaries. Like, actually, I kind of noticed this during the Free Solo film tour, which is now a long time ago, but because I was interacting with so many audiences and people, like, watch the film, and then after they're like, I signed up for a half marathon, or I'm, like, going to replant my garden, or whatever. You know, it's like the stuff that they've been sort of sitting on that they feel like they should do or they want to do, but they just haven't quite executed. Nobody watches it and they're like, I'm gonna go free soloing. You know what I mean? Like, everyone watches it and they're like, I'm gonna start working on that book that I've been thinking about for so long.
You're right. Very few people. And probably,
so actually some kids, I mean, you know, I have met young climbers and things who are like, oh, I saw that, and I'm like, now I'm living in a van and climbing or doing whatever.
Well, when I watched that, it inspired me to make a little animated song that I would like to show you. If I could.
No, I.
It's called Free Climbing. You're going to have to cut through this, Josh, and maybe cut out the part so you get to the incredible animation that I did. Keep going.
Wow. Did you do the animation?
Oh, all of that. It's definitely not AI. Keep going. Wait, go back.
Whoa.
Go back.
I see the muscle.
Go back a little bit. Go back a little bit to the very beginning of this. All right, let's show Alex. This is my song, Free Climbing. You inspired this.
Okay.
This is called Free Climbing. Go ahead and play this.
Sitting on the ledge, I'm about to fly. What's the point of living when your heart is dead? What's the point of singing when you're singing somebody else's song? That's when he climbed up and he said to me, where are your ropes? What are you doing out here? I lied and told him I was free climbing.
Is this AI? This is why the hands are so fucked up.
Yeah.
Like, so, like, what's up with this guy's arms?
Did he always want to try? Free climbing, and he threw his ropes off the ledge. He smiled and said, you inspire me. A little ways up, he lost his grip and fell. I watched his body splatter on the ground below. I climbed to him, and his last words to me were, he said, this cage for
inspire art.
If you call that art.
How dare you? Oh, I can't wait to get that $100 from you. I can't wait. Yeah, that, see, this is a, this man, he was climbing up there, you know, to how do you have to say it on YouTube? Unalive himself.
There you go.
You see, and a climber was like, climbing and saw him. I was like, what are you doing? And he felt embarrassed that he was unaliving himself. So he's like, I'm free climbing. Hmm. And then that guy fell. And
the climber did.
Yeah, the climber did.
It does seem less likely that the climber would fall off than the guy that doesn't know how to climb.
Well, see, that's the sad part. Is like,
I didn't actually pick up on any of that in the song.
Show it to him again.
I'm okay. It was slightly hard to understand. I was maybe just hung up on the animation and things, you know, the artistic expression.
Well, you know, this was the glory days of AI video. Because
this is like a couple years? Or?
This was a while ago, yeah, because back then it wasn't good. And so it would just make this horrific, like monstrous shit. It would spit out. Just the AI is like hallucinating. And yeah, but that to me is like, you know, when that's got to be something you think about, though. It's like, holy shit, man. You don't want people to free climb watching that. It's not like you're telling people to do that, by the way.
No, obviously. Though I will say that the souling, I do think, is very self-selective or sort of self-craving. I don't know what the term for it is. But basically, you know, even if somebody watches a video and they're like, I want to go souling, and then they start to go souling, you're like, well, you have to choose every move you make. So once you're 6 feet off the ground, you're kind of like, oh, you know, I'm like starting to feel a little high. And then you have to choose to make the next move. And then you're 6.5 feet off the ground. And then you're like, I got to choose. You know what I mean? It's like, I mean, there are other sports like, you know, skiing, let's say, where like if you're young and impressionable, you watch a ski film, you're like, I'm going to huck this cliff. Like, yeah, it's going to be sick. And like once you point your skis and you go, like you're hucking the cliff one way or another. But with souling, by the time you get yourself into a position where you could actually die, like say 50 feet off the ground, you had to make a lot of choices to get there, and it takes quite a long time, and it requires a fairly high degree of skill to get that high off the ground. And so, you know, it's like you can't just fall into that situation by accident. You know what I mean?
Is it easier going up or going down?
It depends how fast you're going down, you know?
See, you're funny, man.
You know, we're doing stand-up.
Yeah. But truly, I mean, this is just something I just wonder because
the real answer is that, you know, fundamentally down climbing is easier because it's gravity assisted. So like if you're, say, like climbing a chimney where you're like in a, you know, you imagine like kids in a door frame, you know, where you're counter pressure, like pushing against the sides. Going up that is pretty laborious. Going back down it is pretty easy.
Okay.
You just kind of like slide down. It's
okay.
Like pretty chill.
I gotcha.
But if you're face climbing, like what people imagine like in a gym, you know, where you're grabbing discrete hand and footholds.
Yeah.
That's a little bit harder going down because when you look down, you know, your body's kind of blocking your feet because you're leaning with your feet. So it just makes it a little more awkward.
So what are you doing? Like you just have to kind of remember the steps that...
Ideally, you remember some of them. But also you're just leaning out and looking down really carefully and looking at your feet a lot and just takes longer. It typically takes like... at least 20% more time to go down.
Will you squeeze my hand?
I could if you want, yeah.
Because yeah, I'm scared of this, but don't break my hand.
No.
But give me like, because like
firm,
will you show
gentle.
Your, can you just show your hands? Dude.
Look
at that. Holy shit, you're like a squirrel. Like those are not, those look.
Do you think of squirrels as having particularly large hands?
You gotta see the squirrels in my yard, they're fucked. Here, look, put your hand. Holy Lord. Look at that, Josh, look at that.
Well, it's like a hard working hands, you know, it's like a stonemason.
Okay, now, just squeeze.
Well, I don't wanna like squeeze.
No, do it.
Like really hard?
Don't break it. No, you fucking broke my hand!
I didn't break it. That was gentle.
Dude, you broke my hand.
I hope not.
Fuck, dude, I have arthritis, man.
I was about to say, yeah, osteoarthritis or something.
That's insane, dude. That's insane. Like, what is your grip strength, man?
It's honestly not that high. It's lower than like a bodybuilder or something would be. Just because it's funny because people often give you like a grip meter, you know, like the little things you can squeeze or like a, I don't know what you call that. And they expect like huge numbers, but that's just not what you do. You know what I mean? Like when you're trying to climb something, you don't crush the rock into powder. You just hang from it. So, you know, it's like you want to be strong under like a static load.
But you have finger muscles. Like are those
all the muscle in your hand is controlling your forearm. My fingers are just fat. Sadly.
You don't have fat fingers.
Well,
they're just they're just like wow.
Yeah, it's connective tissue, probably tendons, ligaments. I mean, like crack climbing, when you climb big walls, you're shoving your fingers in and torquing them, and that kind of like probably makes your fingers fatter over time.
Because
they get a little worked.
But you could probably, like if you had to, you could probably like you could probably like shove your fingers into somebody's chest and pull out their heart.
I mean, I think that'd be bad for both of us.
Yeah, but you could.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've never been in a real fight, but I always felt like if I had to.
You've never been in a fight?
No. I mean, have you?
Look at these eyes.
You don't really seem like a fighter.
Look at these eyes. You think I haven't been in a fight? I fought. Are you kidding? I was in prison, man.
Though that cap seems like you got it in the Civil War.
I got it from, I beat up this dude who was in the Civil War.
Yeah, yeah, and the beard, too, for that matter. Yeah, you're definitely
not
like
my beard.
Like a cavalry.
No, know. I glue the hair of people beat up onto my face. I can't grow a beard.
I can't grow anything like that.
Oh, man. Yeah, well, I mean, yeah, you definitely don't. Yeah, I've never. I got
never in a fight.
Give me a break. I've been like, I think when I was in.
The whole point of being a comic is to not get beat up, huh?
Exactly. We have to develop some kind of some weird thing to avoid getting beat up. But yeah, I mean, but you, I doubt you were like bullied when you were a kid.
No, not really.
Because you're athletic.
Well, I was a pretty dorky kid.
Yeah.
And being a rock climber is not really athletic. And certainly I didn't have like any muscles as a kid. You know, you're just like a twiggy little kid that's climbing a lot.
You don't think rock climbing is athletic?
Well, I mean, it's just not like a jock. You know what I mean? Like if you're in high school and you're an elite rock climber, you don't look like you're fit.
Right. But so you
now like, that I'm like a 40-year-old dad, I'm like, yeah, I've like filled out a little more and I'm a little more muscular and whatever. But that's not like the natural climbing build necessarily.
This episode of the DTFH is brought to you by Ethos. Listen, I know you've seen all the commercials where you get beaten over the head with your own mortality because they're trying to sell you life insurance. And I understand right now if you're cringing that I'm doing a life insurance commercial. But dude, look at me. I need life insurance. I got four kids. I used to live in a world where I didn't need life insurance, and I know this sounds ridiculous, but I feel... Do you have life insurance, Josh?
Yes.
You feel better, right?
100%.
When you get it, you feel better. It just makes you feel better to know you could get your brain splattered all over the highway, and your family's going to be okay. You know that a swarm of bees not indigenous to where you're from, killer bees, could just attack you. And in those last agonizing moments, at least you know your family was taken care of. Ethos makes getting life insurance fast and easy. It's 100% online. You can get a quote in seconds, apply in minutes, and get same-day coverage. There's no medical exam. You just answer a few simple health questions. Let me tell you, when I got my life insurance, they took every fluid they could find out of my body to analyze it. You can get up to $3 million in coverage. Some policies are as low as $30 a month, and you'll get your lowest rate from their network of trusted carriers. Ethos, it has 4.8 out of 5 stars on Trustpilot with over 4,000 reviews. Take 10 minutes to get covered today with life insurance through Ethos. You get your free quote at ethos.com/Duncan. That's ethos.com/Duncan. Application times may vary. Rates may vary. Yeah, I mean, you're like a walking muscle, man. Like you just don't realize it because you look at yourself in the mirror every day. Like you don't realize it, but you look like you could, like, if you needed to get into a safe, you could like rip the metal off. You're basically a superhero.
No, definitely not. I think of myself more as a middle-aged dad that loves to do outdoor sports.
When you watch, you know, I always think about like it must be weird to be a surgeon and watch any kind of movie where doctors
do surgery.
Yeah. So when you're like watching Spider-Man or any, you know, superhero movies and you see climbing moves, is the climber part of you coming out and thinking like, that's a weird way to do that?
A little bit. I mean, superhero movies, not so much because you just suspend disbelief and you're like, I mean, Spider-Man, it's sick. He just does all kinds of crazy things.
Yeah.
And that's all fun. When you watch Hollywood films that are supposed to be realistic depictions of rock climbing, that's when you're a little more like, huh, like that's weird. But also, I mean, now at this point, you know, I know a lot of the people that work on that stuff or consult on that stuff or who film those types of things.
Right.
So a lot of the time you're sort of like, oh, my buddy, you know, was like the second unit camera for this like whole mountain scene. And you're like, oh, that's cool. You know, it's like fun to see people's work.
I'm so glad you brought that up, because that brings me to like the, this is like, I think the somewhat unacknowledged heroes of the climbing world.
Camera people.
Who, yeah. What the fuck is happening? Who are they? Like, I'm looking, like, you forget someone's filming it. I know some of it's drones, but
so like in the film Free Solo, like basically none of it's drones because it's a national park. You're not allowed to fly.
Who the fuck is, how are you doing that in filming and doing perfect shots? Like, it's not just like.
Well, because you're always rappelling in from the top. So it's like you're hiking to the summit with ropes and then you're rappelling down. So you're just dangling on a rope with a backpack and a camera and all the stuff. And
no problem. You
know, yeah, it's easy.
Easy, you're right. Yeah.
I mean, it is easier than climbing in so much as, you know, it's obviously easier to hike the top of something and rappel down.
Yeah.
But it does require a very particular expertise and, you know, a high degree of skill.
Yeah. And also, like, you know that, like, no one's going to know that you were dangling from a rope off this cliff. No one's going to know who you are. They're just going to.
That's why I think, you know, like in the film Free Solo, like, yeah. I joke, like Jimmy Chin co-directed Free Solo and co-directed Mary, the film we were talking about earlier.
Yeah.
And he's in both of them, like little talking head type deals.
Yep.
And I kind of joke that, you know, the cameraman always puts himself into the movie because you're like, well, but look at these guys. Like, these guys are rad.
They deserve it. They deserve it. It's nuts. I know, totally. Without them, we wouldn't get to watch.
Yeah, there'd be no film.
Yeah. Okay.
And to their credit, I mean, the film team, part of the reason I even made the film Free Solo was that it was helpful for me to have the team for all my prep, because basically for me to practice on the wall, I'd hike to the top, I'd rappel down, I'd work on all the things. And basically it's easier to do that with a partner. And so having a film crew
right.
You know, one of the filmers is a partner for that type of stuff just makes it all work better. And so it's all a team effort, basically.
Josh, can you grab me some ice for my hand? Yeah. You really fucked me up, man. Like, you did that on purpose. Like, you heard it crack.
It didn't crack.
I have osteoporosis.
Well, that's, well, you told me.
You're incredible, and I you know, I've smoked weed my whole life, so I forget things. But what's the name of your Netflix, the thing you just did on Netflix where you climbed the
building? Taipei 101.
Okay, when I was watching that, I was legitimately nervous for you, man, because I am looking at that building and I'm thinking, like, the difference between this building, this is not rock that's been there forever. This is man-made. I'm looking at you grab these things. I'm like, dude, how did you safety check an entire building? How do you know when you're grabbing this place or that it's not going to break or fall off, or the construction worker wasn't, you know, being a little slack that day?
Yeah, part of it's structural, you know, if something's like part of the building, you know, there are always things where you're like, that's ornamental and it's just like bolted on, and
there's
stuff where you're like, this is the building itself.
Yeah.
And so like with Taipei 101, part of it, you know, I was climbing the arete, like the outside corner of the building. So I was basically squeezing the two sides of the building together. So right there, it makes the whole thing feel safer, because instead of holding one thing where, like, if the thing breaks and you fall off, this is like you're squeezing the whole mountain.
Right.
Or the corner of the building.
Right.
So like that's part of it. But then also part of it was that, like, so, I mean, breaking a hold is obviously a concern on real rock as well. Like, if you're climbing and you snap something and the rock snaps,
yeah,
and then you fall off and you die. And so that's always kind of the thing you're worried about, is like, what if I break something? But with buildings, in a lot of ways, it's less scary, because metal just doesn't snap like that in the same way. You know, like, it deforms, like, it bends, it like crumples before
right,
it snaps.
Right.
And so on the building, like, you can feel all the things have a little bit of give to them. Like, if you bounce on some of the ledges, you really pull hard, like, you can make the things flex.
Yeah.
But you're just not going to... it's not just going to rip off. You know what I mean? Like, and also, I mean, I would say the quality assurance on a massive skyscraper, like the biggest building in the city, is way higher than, it's not like the trim on your roof or something.
Right.
You know what I mean? Because like on a suburban house, it's like, yeah, pieces fall off. Like, nobody really cares.
Yeah.
But on one of these skyscrapers, if a piece falls off, somebody's going to die.
Yeah,
you know
right.
I mean? And so it's right, kind of right, like, right, and it's right. routinely exposed to high winds. Like, basically, they are built well.
Right.
Like, much better than you would think from just looking at, like, casual buildings around town.
Wow, man. I just kept wondering, like...
That said, there were a few pieces missing here and there, and you were sort of like, that's a little...
You
know.
But didn't you map it out first?
Yeah, like, yeah. I checked it all ahead of time.
How?
Well, I climbed it, like, with a rope once. Just, like, check it.
Okay, I gotcha. And you just... you did that same path.
Yeah, roughly. I mean, it was honestly, it's hard to remember because the building's like kind of all the same.
Yeah.
And I was alternating between one corner. Basically, there are three corners on the corner of the building. It makes a little like accordion thing, goes in and out again. And I zigzagged around on it anyway. It was like confusing as to like which bamboo box you're on, which corner you're supposed to be climbing.
Yeah.
Because they were moving the camera positions around and like there are different angles for different things and whatever.
What did the pitch for that look like? Like, how did that come up? How did you pitch it to Netflix or did they?
No, so like more than 10 years ago, a friend had sort of pitched the idea to a different network as like, let's do a live thing.
Yeah.
And we scouted it and we checked the building and we'd like looked at a handful of buildings around the world. And that was the best one. But then that project fell apart. And so now for the last, you know, 10 years plus, in the back of my mind, I've like known that I could climb the building. But you just don't really want to do it without permission and without,
right,
you know, like being a thing. And then, I don't know, I made a couple TV shows with this company based in the UK that that I loved working with. And it was like good experiences and they were like looking for other projects. And so they pitched this around and then Netflix was into it.
Did, I got to ask, man, what was the, you know, making any kind of show, you've got to like, you have to get insurance and stuff.
Well, yeah. And so to be fair, you're like, how do you make the show? Like, honestly, I don't really know because, you know, I talked to the production company and they're kind of like, we're going to pitch this thing. And I'm like, sure, you guys do you. Like, because at any given time, I have a bunch, you know, there are many people pitching many things and realistically only a small fraction actually come to fruition.
Right.
Like most of them just wither and die or like never happen. And so I'm always kind of like, you know, if you have an idea, run with it. Because I don't really believe it's ever going to happen. And like with the building thing, you know, for months I was kind of like, yeah, cool. You know, you guys do you, you do you. And then it was kind of like, oh, it's coming together. And I was like, really? Like it's coming together? Like we're actually going to do this? And then it was, you know, it's actually happening. We did a scout a couple months ahead of time where we went back to the building. And that's when you get all the like marketing material stuff and like the photos of standing below the building, looking heroic and whatever. And then I was like, oh, wow, we're like actually doing it, you know? But even then you don't totally believe it until you're there for the climb. Cause you're like at the last moment, the network can pull out, anybody can pull out and it just doesn't happen.
It's quite often that's what happens.
Like it wouldn't be at all surprising. And so literally the week of the climb, I'm there, I'm prepped, I'm ready to do it. And you're still kind of like, you know, we'll see.
Right.
And then I actually do it. And I was like, this is so sick. It's so fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, you don't really believe it until you're actually doing it.
Well, right. Cause you know, your general experience with climbing has not been like an audience, a global audience watching.
Well, the global part you don't notice because
for
me climbing it, you know, it's basically the same experience as making the film Free Solo, where it's like, I have a handful of friends hanging here and there on ropes. And actually it's many of the same friends. It was actually super fun. Cause it was like getting the band back together. You know, it was like all my friends like on the wall.
Cool
thing.
Cool.
Just like, oh, so except that this time, instead of like staying in tents, we're all staying at the Grand Hyatt across the street. You know, it's like totally baller.
It's baller.
And then when you're done with the climb, you take the elevator and you go get some snacks and you're just like, wow, this is so chill compared to mountain climbing.
Oh my God, dude, like, it was awesome. It's my favorite part was like the people who apparently had no idea. Some people, you freaked the fuck out. Like some people did not understand what was happening and the expressions were incredible. But also I got worried there. Because, you know, I got worried they're going to distract you or, you know, that this is going to fuck with your head. Anything could have happened, you know?
Yeah, but that kind of stuff all seems within the tolerance. Because, like, when you're out soloing in nature, you know, they're ants, they're birds, they're bats. There's, like, all kinds of stuff. You know, there's nature, basically.
Yeah.
There's, like, stuff happening. Like, you might see a snake or, like...
But the snake's not taking, like, a selfie with you in the background.
Well, but, like, if you put, like, in real nature, like, you put your hand into a crack, sometimes bats will hiss. Like, because, you know, you're crack climbing, so you're like, following these fissures. And, like, often, I mean, if you put your hand... Like, I've had birds, like, run down my arm and fly away. Have you ever heard a bat, like, hiss?
No.
Or, like, they scream. It's, like, this horrible noise. It's very scary.
Can you pull up bat hiss just so people can really get
a... Like, a bat scream. It's, like, this horrible noise. It's, like, really quite scary. But basically, you like put your hand into a crack and it's like it screams at you basically. And you're like, ah. And you can hear like things skittering inside. You know what I mean? So
think how scary it is for the bat. You think the bat's scary? Like suddenly.
Well, yeah, like look at that thing. Like
it's from the New York Post.
Oh, I love the New York Post.
Show the turning point, bat.
Wait, but where's the noise? No, that's a freaking
cat. That's a cat. Come on, Josh.
That didn't quite do justice. I don't know if that's the real
one. Look for another one.
That's a...
Yeah, basically, it's like this horrible high
pitch. I mean, I do want to hear... There we go. Bat call sound noises.
Well,
No, I don't do that. That's not get off of my crack.
Here, scroll back up. There was one that said screams like a monster. What's the massive bat scream?
That one. That one.
The one in the middle there. Massive bat screams like a monster.
Is that real?
Is that? I know. I'm like, what?
That's not. That's not real, Josh.
Yeah, like what is that?
See, this is the world we're in now, Alex. In the old days, you used to be able to find bats.
This is why
screams.
I don't serve YouTube, you know?
Exactly.
If you want to experience it, just climb enough cracks and eventually you're going to find one.
All right, everybody. Just go climbing up and stick your hand in cracks. I didn't even think of that.
Like frogs, like caterpillars, like all kinds of things, you know?
Have you been bitten by a bat?
I don't think so. I've been stung by bees, I guess. that does not do justice.
That's like a dog toy.
Yeah, that's like a lovely, that's all idyllic.
So can you imitate what it sounds like?
Yeah, just like really loud, really high pitch, and like a serious hiss, you know? You're like, ugh. But basically it's very startling if you put your hand into a crack and then something screams at you.
And it's not like when you're climbing, you can shine a flashlight in the crack to make sure there's not a bat in it. You just have to pray to God.
Yeah.
There's not a snake.
Well, typically things live deep enough in that your hand isn't going to disturb it, but that's not always the case.
Wow. I never once thought.
Dude, but so the worst thing is ants, because so like in the springtime in Yosemite, let's say,
yeah,
it's like red ant season, and a lot of the cracks that you're climbing will literally be highways of ants running up and down them. And so when you're climbing, the ants just like wander down and they're like biting you and they're crawling all over you and you get bitten and you just can't really stop necessarily. I mean, you can kind of like take one hand off and wipe them or whatever.
What can you do?
Well, nothing. You just like try to get through it as fast as you can. But if the climbing's hard, you just can't rush it that much. And so you're sort of like, okay. And you just ignore the fact that you're getting bitten by red ants. And when red ants bite you, they let out this smell thing. It's like pretty, it's like an acidy smelling, like acrid, like bitter. And you're like, ah. Anyway, it's like this very particular odor and pain. And you're just like, this sucks. And, you know, what are you going to do? Anyway, all that to say, like seeing somebody taking a selfie with you through the window, less distracting than being bitten by ants, seeing a snake or like any of these other things.
It's nothing.
Yeah, it's like, it's pretty chill.
Yeah, this episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Listen, friends, these days are weird. I don't know what's going on out there financially in the world. Everything's wibbly wobbly, as my grandfather used to say. It's wibbly wobbly out there. A lot of people are experiencing a lot of stress. Maybe you got a family, maybe you don't, but getting worried over your bank account is unfortunately, I think, fairly common these days. 88% of Americans reported feeling some form of financial stress at the start of 2026. Money worries often bring anxiety, sleep disruption, and even depression, and are one of the leading sources of conflict for couples. This month, we want to normalize the emotional weight of financial stress and remind people that struggling with money doesn't mean they failed. Sometimes it's just about accessing the right kind of support, and you can find that support at BetterHelp. BetterHelp therapists work according to a strict code of conduct and are fully licensed in the U.S. BetterHelp does the initial matching work for you so you can focus on your therapy goals. A short questionnaire helps identify your needs and preferences, and their 12-plus years of experience and industry-leading match fulfillment rate means they typically get it right the first time. If you aren't happy with your match, switch to a different therapist at any time from their tailored recs. With over 30,000 therapists, BetterHelp is the world's largest online therapy platform, having served over 6 million people globally. And it works with an average rating of 4.9 out of 5 for a live session based on over 1.7 million client reviews. When life feels overwhelming, therapy can help. Sign up and get 10% off at betterhelp.com/Duncan. That's betterhelp.com/Duncan. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Thank you, BetterHelp. That's something I never thought about. All these little things. Also, the heat. How hot do those rocks get? Like,
Dude, yeah, no, climbing in the sun, I mean, and climbing shoes are really tight black rubber. I mean, they like burn your feet if you're in full sun. So, you know, actually when I scouted Taipei 101 the first time, it was in September. And so the building, it was like 90 degrees and 90% humidity, which sounds like a normal day in Austin here.
So, yeah, right.
But it was like brutal. And I went to like scout the building to like climb it. And I literally jumped up and grabbed it. And the first move, you like jump up and start. And it like burned my hands. And I basically jumped back down. And then I borrowed gloves from one of the riggers. And then I climbed the whole bottom of the building with gloves on because it was like burning my skin.
What if you, I'm so sorry. This seems like a cheap, vulgar question, but what do you do if you have to use the bathroom?
Well, normally on a cliff, you just go to the bathroom. It's like no big deal. You just pee off the cliff.
Yeah.
On the building, that actually was one of my biggest concerns, really, because obviously you don't want to be disrespectful to the building. You can't just pee off. There are people everywhere. There are cameras everywhere.
Yeah.
And so I just made sure that I peed right ahead of time, and then, you know, you just hold it for the building.
Wow. It
was something I was like slightly stressed about, honestly, because you're so used to on cliffs, like just peeing anytime you want to. And so you drink as much as you can. I mean, because on a cliff, there are always places you can stop.
Okay.
Like, stances.
Right.
Like, even if something's like a very small foothold, I mean, you can still just stand there and pee out. You know, it's like pretty chill.
You got to wonder how many hikers you've pissed on. You've got to wonder how many people have been hiking and they're like, whoa.
There aren't that many people hiking right at the base of a giant vertical wall.
You've definitely pissed on a hiker. Like, for sure, someone has gotten Alex Honnold piss on them and has no idea that, like, the greatest climber just... Do you think of yourself as the greatest climber?
No. Like, all of my friends are better than me. But, you know, I try my best.
Who's the...
The thing is, you can't really say the greatest climber because it's such a broad sport. So, yeah, none of my friends are better at free soloing than me, necessarily. Though there are other people in the world who have done harder solos in different ways, and depending how you quantify it and all that kind of stuff. But then, if you just think of... strongest climber, like the hardest grade you can climb sport climbing or something with a rope, then, you know, many of my friends are much better. Like, I mean, some of my working friends who are like professionals, you know, who's like a doctor and stuff, and you'd be like, oh, you're still like kind of better than me at a lot of things,
wow.
Even though you're like, you know, have a full-time job. You're like, wow. God, that's annoying.
Well, you know, when you came in, you mentioned that you have a foundation that gets off-grid solar to people. Tell me about that. I didn't know you did that. That's so cool.
Yeah, the Honnold Foundation. I started it.
What's it? The Honnold Foundation.
Yeah, just the Honnold Foundation. Basically, I knew that I would never make that much money as a rock climber. But I was kind of like, well, if I make it as a public thing, at least I can sort of fundraise more, which actually has really played out because I think this year we'll pass 20 million in grants that we've given to solar around the world, which is pretty crazy.
Whoa.
Yeah.
So how does it work? Like you get a pile of money, and then how do you pick where to go?
We do an open call for grant applications from around the world. So basically community organizations from anywhere on earth that we sort of have some geographic focuses both domestically and abroad. But basically anyone can apply for a grant to use solar for their community.
What got you into that?
I wanted to do something positive for nature. I wanted to help. Basically, I wanted to do something useful in the world.
Yeah.
And then it's kind of like there's no real point in protecting nature if you're not helping human communities, because basically like humans don't care about nature unless their basic needs are met. So
It's
kind of like, well, what is good for nature and helps humans? And basically energy access to me was the fundamental. But also I think that climate change will be the defining issue of my lifetime. Like basically the transition to renewables and transition away from fossil fuels is kind of like the defining thing that I'm going to witness in my life, I think.
Other than alien disclosure.
Yeah, I don't think that one's going to make it.
And losing $100.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll see. I'd be happy to be proved wrong, but
listen, I agree with you. Like you look at what's happening in the world, and it is so incredibly obvious and dark that the thing that's fucking the world up right now is that we have become addicted to a black.
Yeah, fossil fuels. You're like, it's crazy.
It doesn't
the
look
fact that the U.S. has basically spent the last, you know, 25 years in sort of like energy wars, you know, like all the different conflicts in the Middle East and all that kind of stuff. You're just kind of like, do we need to be doing any of that? You're like, why?
Well,
like,
for oil, you got to get the oil.
What's crazy, though, is the U.S. is the world's largest exporter of oil. Like, we don't really need that either. And yet we're still fighting wars over oil, even though it's like not even, you know, I mean, it's not like. You know, there are plenty of other countries in the world that don't have domestic oil or gas supplies, and so like would make sense for them to fight wars over resources.
Right.
But like we already have the biggest, you know, biggest export of oil and gas. You're kind of like, I don't think we need to fight people over it.
Well,
but
it's what's really fucked up. I just had Abby Martin on. She's a journalist. She just did a documentary on how many barrels of oil the U.S. military uses per day. Mm. So that,
that's how you drive up oil prices. You just freaking burn it all in your tanks.
That's where it gets fucked up. It's like the thing is fighting oil wars just to get more oil to fight more oil.
Yeah, it's insane.
Feedback loop of destruction.
Yeah, it's insane.
Yeah, dude, I mean, I got a Tesla and it's like, whoa. It's the craziest thing to like pay $12 to fill up your car. And
well, or you have home solar. I mean, because I have home solar and then I drive a Rivian, same deal, electric car. And so I basically just, you're just totally detached from that. And the thing is, like, once you sort of separate from that system, you are sort of like, man, do I want to go back to paying a utility bill and paying for gas and doing all that? You're like, why would, you know, like, why do that?
Playoff hockey is a different level. It's unpredictable, physical, and every shift counts. There's no room for coasting. If you think climbing a cliff like Alex Honnold takes focus, try keeping up with the Stanley Cup playoffs. NHL on TNT has the best coverage, with a panel that's just fun to watch. Paul Bissonnette brings the laughs, and Wayne Gretzky breaks down the action so anyone can follow. The studio coverage makes every game feel bigger. Watch the Stanley Cup playoffs on TNT, TBS, True TV, and HBO Max.
Lots of places can accidentally expose you to identity theft. Doctor's offices, online retailers, insurance companies, the list goes on. Thankfully, LifeLock monitors hundreds of millions of data points a second for threats to your identity, which is way more than anyone can do on their own. LifeLock keeps an eye on your personal information, credit applications, finances, and more. And if they find anything suspicious, like new loans or changes to your financial accounts, they alert you right away. All through text, phone, email, or the LifeLock app. Even better, alerts are automatically activated the moment you become a LifeLock member. No extra work on your part. Get the alerts that could make all the difference. Don't wait. Join LifeLock now. Visit LifeLock.com/iHeart and save up to 40% your first year. That's LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.
Well, and you're kind of like, why does the world still do that? Like, why not just move on?
Because the people, like the oil companies, they have all the money. They're the most powerful conglomerates. They have lobbyists. They have propagandists out there who, because the thing you're talking about is like humans, we just do things the way we've always done it. That's what we're used to. Yeah. And the thing you're talking about,
it's like, why don't you do it differently?
Yeah, we're all tethered. You know, you look up and you see like power lines and you're used to it. Like people don't even like, but if we jump back.
100 years, then you're like, somebody had to build all those.
I'm sure it would look horrible. Like you would look, someone's been taking AI and showing what cities would look like without power lines. Just the removal of power lines.
That would be amazing, huh?
It's beautiful.
But I think of that, I mean, what would a city be like with removal of fossil fuel, like for transit? You know, it's like if everything's driving electric and it's all clean and quiet, you're like, oh, cities would be a lot nicer. Like without the smell of diesel and exhaust and like truck traffic and just like, you know, just, yeah, the noise.
We all felt it. The pandemic. When the pandemic happened in LA, I was in LA. No one's driving, and I'll, like
yeah, the sky's clear, and you're like, "Ooh, this is actually not that bad."
The air
exactly.
Smells yeah,
take
good.
A deep breath. You're like, "Oh, we are near the ocean actually, and it's kind of nice here." You're like,
yeah.
"Weird."
Yeah, this idea of solar, which by the way somehow got like wrapped up in woke. So now, even now, people watching this are like, "Ugh, fucking woke assholes talking about."
Oh no, take it the other way, because I mean. Let's talk about energy independence. Let's talk about, like, I think the solar should be like a prepper thing. You know, like, if you're a hardcore conservative, 100%. You should be into solar.
100%.
Basically, it's like, you don't need to go abroad to get your energy. You freaking make it at home.
Well,
you know what I mean? Like,
let's
talk about prices. Let's talk about freaking, yeah, it's like, I want preppers.
But solar panels, they're evolving, right? Like, the old, like, our house has solar panels on them, but they're old solar panels. So, like, their ability to convert energy apparently isn't that great.
No, I mean, it's still more than adequate. Yeah, it's true that panels are getting more efficient and obviously getting, I mean, they've gotten so much cheaper. I mean, now it's the cheapest form of energy in the world. But, I mean, any panel still makes energy from the sun. I mean, that's kind of the miracle. Yeah. Because even, like, 30-year-old panels are still working, still work great, still producing energy. And you're kind of like, especially on a house, you're like, you know,
but to run a whole house, how many panels do you need for that?
Oh, not, I mean, I don't know, not that much, like 4 kilowatts or something.
Really? You That's crazy.
Well, like, I don't know. I mean, what? That's, yeah, 20 pounds. I mean, basically, you know, depends on the house.
Wow, but, man.
You don't need a ton.
I just don't think people recognize also that if we could have decentralized energy, like, and especially like once we start getting super efficient batteries and super efficient solar panels, it's going to untet, like, so much of what we think of as the way society works, mm-hmm. we're tethered mm-hmm. to energy. We have to have these lines connecting everything. I don't think people realize, like, if we...
Though even with solar, I mean, ideally, you still have a grid, you still have power lines and stuff, mostly just because, you know, so, like, my house is on solar, but we're still connected to the grid. We're still tied into the system because we're not using batteries in the house. Basically, because I don't think that every house needs batteries. Like, every house doesn't need to be its own little kingdom, like, making energy, storing its own energy, using its own. You know, it's like society is stronger with the grid, basically.
Why do you think that?
Because you can generate in some places and use it in others. Like, because in my house, you know, I'm making a bunch of solar in the middle of the day, but I'm not necessarily using all that power in the middle of the day.
Right.
But like my neighbor might be, you know, running his his dryer right then. So you're kind of like, well, my neighbor should be using that power.
That's so cool.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. So in this sort of utopian.
Well, that's not even utopian. I think that's how the grid works. Like basically whoever's using power at the time uses the power.
Well, yeah, I'm saying though, in the utopian world that you're going to create and lead, I'm beginning to realize you might be like the Maitreya I don't mean to say utopia like to say it's bad. I'm saying think
utopia
of
by definition is very good.
Yeah, you know, but people are here. We go. But if we had instead of everyone being connected to like some central place where power is coming
like
from, neighborhoods, neighborhoods that had were all had solar and were just sharing energy with each other.
Totally,
that's incredible.
Yeah,
that would be so beautiful.
Well, I mean that's. I think the way the world will be in the next 50 years, just because that'll be the most cost effective and most elegant, you know, it's kind of like the solution that works. And I'm sort of like, I don't know, I wouldn't be surprised if that's basically the way the world is. And certainly that's going to be the way the world is in much of the developing world, because there's just so many places on Earth where they're never going to build a grid. You know, they're never going to build a big coal power plant and then put power lines out. It's like all going to be decentralized like that, like microgrids and things.
Right. Yeah.
And that's a big part of what the work my foundation does, is because there are tons of places on Earth where it's like never going to be feasible to build conventional power. So you're like, well, you do microgrids, you put panels on roofs, and yeah.
You ever go out there to see like the places you're giving energy to?
Not particularly, just because I'm sort of, and I mean, the whole point is like environmental.
Oh, right.
So basically it's like,
why fly to?
Yeah, exactly. Like why fly to the place? Why? Also, like, why burden your partner by showing up, being like, give me a tour because I want to feel good about what I've done. I'm kind of like,
that is
they're
lame.
Doing the work, like, that's fine. I think that's kind of like ecotourism, you know, where you're just like.
That is lame. You're like, totally right.
But, I mean, I've obviously gone to a few places, like, to help in different ways. And then also toured a few things for storytelling sort of stuff because someone's, like, making a TV program about one of the projects. And so then you go and you do interviews and you chit chat with people. And it's all part of this experience to, like, showcase it in a television program. And then it makes total sense. It feels uncontrived to be there.
Right.
And it is, I mean, it is amazing to see, obviously, like when you go, it is, it's funny because it is nice for me, you know, I've been working on the foundation the last 14 years, I guess, 2012 I started it.
Huh.
And yeah, every couple of years you go to some project like that for storytelling or, you know, for TV or who knows what. And you are like, God, it's so nice to see. Like, it is very gratifying. You know, like, I know rationally that I don't need to see the projects because, you know, it's like, as long as the work's getting done and the world's getting better, that's all that matters. But then when you do see it, you're like, oh, it does make it easier to do the work when you feel all inspired and motivated.
That's right. Yeah, man. You should. I get it, though. It's cool. I mean, you could go in disguise, I guess. You know what I mean? You don't want to go parading around some village and be like, this power is for me.
Yeah, that's so lame. But on the other hand, when you see it totally transform people's lives, you are like, wow, like that's like this is effort worth making.
Man, you are an inspiring human being. You really are. What's your next big climb?
Don't know. Tomorrow I'll be climbing home. Basically, everyone always asks, like, what's the next project? And, these people are asking, like, what's the next big media project? And you just, like, don't really know what the next film or thing will be. I mean, there'll probably be another building if we get permission and if Netflix is into it, obviously. But, which would be awesome. Like, I'm super psyched for that if it comes together. But, like, who knows if or when that'll come together. In the meantime, I always have my own projects, like, things that I'm working on. But they're not, you know, like, no one's filming. There's no... It's just me going climbing, trying to do things that are hard for me.
Gotcha.
So like tomorrow I'll go back to try this project that I haven't gotten to try in a couple of weeks because it's been too cold where I lived.
What is it?
Just like some sport route. Just it's like I think it'd be the hardest sport route I've ever climbed, but it's just, you know, like safe with a rope, just with a buddy. We'll just be up in the mountain trying this thing, and I'll almost certainly climb half of it and get really tired and fall off and be like, wow, I'm so smoked. You know, it's just, we'll see.
Wow. Well, you know what I see for us, our future together? I think we're going to climb together, you and
Dude,
me.
Come climbing.
That's your next show.
Honestly, the thing I said that I scrambled the other day, it would be a perfect route for you. You'd love it.
That's the next show. You Let's take people like me, free climbing, and we die.
Yeah. That'd be good television, huh?
That would be incredible. People would love that. You could pick
out. Or be slightly traumatic because they'd be like, that was my favorite comic. He's gone.
No one's going to say that.
At least one person will.
Alex, you are awesome, man. Thank you for your time. This has been so cool getting to know you, man. Thank you.
No, it's a total pleasure.
Ow! Fuck, dude. Why? Why do you keep doing that? Thank you so much. Everybody, you will find the Honnold Foundation, I'm sure, online. We'll have all the links down below. Anything you want to, you don't need to plug anything.
No, everyone should try rock climbing. It's the best.
You heard it here. I'm going climbing with Alex right after this.
Not free soloing, but, you know, go to a gym. Check it out. It's so fun.
You're the best. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
That was Alex Honnold, everybody. Why don't you check out his foundation, the Honnold Foundation. He's helping people out there in the world. And if you haven't watched Taipei 101 on Netflix yet, please watch it. It is crazy to watch this amazing person scale this insanely gigantic building. Come see me do stand-up, won't you? I'll see you next week. Until then, Hare Krishna.
My perfect day has sand, salt, water, and friends. But my moderate to severe plaque psoriasis can take me out of the moment. Now I'm all in with clearer skin thanks to Skyrizi. Risankizumab Riza, a prescription-only 150-milligram injection for adults who are candidates for systemic or phototherapy. With Skyrizi, most people saw 90% clearer skin, and many were even 100% plaque-free at 4 months. Skyrizi is just 4 doses a year after 2 starter doses.
Don't use if allergic to Skyrizi. Serious allergic reactions, increased infections, or lower ability to fight them may occur. Before treatment, get checked for infections and tuberculosis. Tell your doctor about any flu-like symptoms or vaccines.
Thanks to Skyrizi, there's nothing on my skin. And that means everything. Nothing is everything. Ask your doctor about Skyrizi, the number one dermatologist-prescribed biologic in psoriasis. Visit Skyrizi.com or call 1-866-SKYRIZI to learn more.
Lots of places can expose you to identity theft. That's why LifeLock monitors hundreds of millions of data points a second for threats to your identity, which is way more than anyone can do on their own. If we find anything suspicious, like new loans or changes to your financial accounts, we alert you right away, all through text, phone, email, or the LifeLock app. Save up to 40% your first year. Visit LifeLock.com/iHeart. Terms apply.
How to have fun anytime, anywhere. Step one, go to ChumbaCasino.com.
ChumbaCasino.com. Got it.
Step two, collect your welcome bonus.
Come to Papa, welcome bonus.
Step three, play hundreds of casino-style games for free.
That's a lot of games, all for free.
Step four, unleash your excitement.
Woo-hoo! Chumba Casino has been delivering thrills for over a decade. So claim your free welcome bonus now and live the Chumba life. Visit ChumbaCasino.com.
Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus terms and conditions apply.